I was joking with a friend earlier today that I was going to call this episode Weed and Avocados. but maybe I won't. But let me explain. You know, over the last few years, I would say maybe 6-7 years, I've been thinking about the need for churches to reimagine their finance plan. In other words, their budget, where their income comes from. Traditionally, the American church has depended upon tithes and offerings. In other words, a church of, let's say, 500 would expect 90% of their income to come from the people themselves, from the people that tithe, meaning they give 10% of their income, and those who don't give as much, but they provide the offerings, as we call it, meaning they might give $20 a week, $100 a month, they might give more or less. And that has been that has worked for a long time, until the last 10 years or so, as less people are interested in church, as less people have the financial means to give to church, as the church has gotten older, people are on fixed incomes, as the church has become more urban and more inner city. You have single moms who have to work 2, 3, 4 jobs. They make $1,000 a month. And so to give 20% or 10% would mean giving $100 a month to the church. The average giving from a family unit or a single unit in the urban church is $100 a month. If you have a budget of, let's say, $500,000, we're talking about having to have a church of maybe 1,000 and have everybody give $100 a month to be able to survive. That is pretty impossible. And so churches have to get creative about how to go about existing. And this is, let me just remind you, this is way beyond paying pastors and that kind of stuff. We're talking about existing. We're talking about paying property taxes, about paying for the AC and for the, if you have a mortgage on the on your building. We're talking about just the basics to survive as a church, as an organization, as a nonprofit. Because if you want to talk about pastor salaries or staff salaries, we're talking about pastors who have 2, 3, 4 jobs, whose wives have to work full time, whose kids hopefully are also working so they can provide for their own expenses, whose kids are going to public colleges or to city colleges in order to keep costs down. So we're talking about the church's survival, not about paying pastors to drive around in fancy cars and take 6 weeks of vacation every year. So with that said, I want to give you 11 steps that you and your church can take in order to begin to move towards a different financial plan that will establish you for the next 10, 20, 30 years, that will motivate your people to give, that will utilize your assets in order to provide income and be a blessing to your community. So, oh, by the way, the reason why I wanted to call this episode Weeds and Avocado is because if you really want to do this, you might as well sell weed and avocados at your church. I am only partly kidding. Number one, consider using the 40-40-20 rule. The 40-40-20 rule is a flexible a breakdown of how you may want to consider organizing your church budget. 40% could be, if you are a giving church, could be your tithes and offerings. 40% tithes and offerings. The other 40% would be rentals, investments, things that you may not be currently doing. Now, that might be the 20%, and this is why these numbers are flexible, but they are good ways to organize your life or your church's budget. So in my case, we've been doing this now for the last 8 years in 2 different churches that I've been a part of. 40% came from rentals, 40% came from investments, and 20% came from tithes and offerings. Number two is see what's selling around you and do that, sell that. And this is again why I joke about avocados and weed, because it seems like everyone is selling weed, or they are everyone seems to be eating avocados. But what I really mean is, look at what's selling around your church property. Look at what people seem to be begging for. Now, you may not have a good read on this because your church maybe has never really done this. You haven't really explored these options yet because you didn't need to until now, or until if there is an economic downturn in 2020 or 2021, this may be something you're going to have to do very soon. And so hopefully this will prepare you to do so. But what I mean is, look at what people seem to be buying a lot of around you. So for example, when I was at the church at USC in downtown LA, there were a ton of food trucks around the university because there were a million students who were always hungry. And so there were all kinds of food trucks. And so that's something I noticed. I thought, oh, okay. Another thing that I noticed is how students needed places to live, dorms, but not just dorms on campus, but housing that was near the university, that was affordable, that was within walking distance, that was safe. At the church that I'm currently at here in the Long Beach Bellflower area, I've noticed that because of the density of where we're at, there's a need for event halls, for a place to have parties. So like quinceañeras and even things like wakes and funerals. Because of what I've noticed around us, I've taken note of that and thought, can our church be a place for people to host their parties? So that's number two. Look what's selling around you. Look at what the need is. Look at what's growing around you. And then write that down. Number three is evaluate your own space, your own assets. Now, most traditional churches in urban environments, they are in huge facilities that are 100 years old, that are super torn down. Maybe you've been through a remodel. Maybe you haven't. Maybe you've done the bathrooms and a few offices, but you pretty much have an older building. Maybe you owe some money on a remodel that you did, or maybe you don't own a dime. Evaluate your current space and do not, here's what I recommend, don't invest into it until you make at least $50,000 from new revenue. So instead of going out and investing $3 million in your new church so that you can then go and make money, instead, use the space as it is. Do some basic stuff, clean it, clean the floors, vacuum the carpet, paint the walls, maybe remodel the bathrooms, but just in-house. Don't do a major building permit, city type stuff. Just do minor stuff, especially bathrooms, floors, your grassy area if you have one. Some of those basic things that are very important for guests and for people renting a space. And use what you have. Think of the kind of services that, not that you want to provide, but as I said in number two, that people are begging for. That maybe your congregants are telling you about, but remember that a lot of your congregants they're probably not looking to rent your church and to pay for it. They want it for free, and we'll talk about prices here in a second. But ask around, go to Starbucks, go to the local 7-Eleven, see what type of businesses and buildings are popping up around your church. And then, based on that, look at your assets and then think, is there a connection here between the need and the supply? So basic economics, supply and demand. Number four is develop systems that are ready to go. And I'm talking about security, safety of your campus, a calendar system, cleaning system, security cameras, an event planner. So before you get out there and begin to rent your space or make investments or provide office space, you want to make sure that you have one or two people that are actually going to manage the demand, taking the phone calls, showing the space around. In my estimation, it takes one person about an extra 20 hours just to show and tell, just to wine and dine potential customers. It's a big deal. I've had different people do it. I've done it before. I've had volunteer staff. It's a big deal. But think through not only that, but also think through the systems. Who's going to clean all of the extra, if there's more garbage that's being collected every Friday night or Saturday night or on the weekends or during the week, how are you going to manage just things like trash and cleaning the kitchen and cleaning your floors and security cameras? Are you going to use your current scheduling software, or are you going to do something new? Think through your system, especially safety, cleaning, security. Those are the basic things that your church needs to think through so that you don't get in trouble, and that the customer is going to want to also know if you have those things. So think through your systems. Number five is make sure that you get the support of your church. This is obviously, maybe this goes without saying, but you want to be very upfront with your church about this. You want to present this to the church as a way forward for your church to be financially healthy and financially strong. You don't want to have this just be like a fun idea or something you read in a book or something that you just kind of want to try. You want to have this be a very clear definition of a financial plan. You want to tell your church this is the way forward. And you may have to try it for 3 months, kind of do a trial run. You may have to get some different board members to agree with you beforehand. You may have to have meetings with people that will have maybe some they'll complain or they have some concerns about these things. And so you want to do your homework so that this gets through and that your church is excited, gets behind it. They have all their questions answered, and most of all, that they are the kind of your marketing in some ways, that they tell their friends that your church is offering these certain services to the community. Now, as I'm talking about this whole thing of getting your church to be behind you, try to be very clear and precise with how much money you need from rentals and from investments. So back to the 40-40-20 rule. Break down your budget. So as I said, if your budget is $100,000, just to keep it simple, and then $40,000, and let's say currently you're bringing in $60,000 out of $100,000 in tithes and offerings, but you're seeing the trend. You're seeing that the trend is less money coming in from tithes and offerings. You should tell the church, hey, in 2015 it was $60,000, but in 2018 it's $52,000. And if we project that over the next 5 years, it may mean that out of the $100,000 that you need, only $40,000 are coming in from tithes and offerings. And this is, again, whether you're growing or not, this is just the economic reality of society, especially in urban churches. And so when you go to the 2020 or the 40-40-20 rule and you're talking to your church, be specific. Make some projections about how much money you need to make in your church so that people can really be excited about what you're doing. Now, number six, involve your youth and college students to actually work at your church. They could be volunteers. They could be actually paid staff. Here's what I mean. If you're going to rent your space, remember I was talking about safety and cleaning and setup and that kind of stuff. Well, why not use your, let's say, 16 and over crowd, your young adults, your late teens, to provide for them internships at your church as event planners, as the cleanup crew, as the people who man the front desk, who perhaps even show the room to people, or who put up a website with pictures of your fellowship hall or your office space or whatever you're going to do. So think through who in your church, especially the young people, can benefit from this new approach to income. How can you train them? How can you pay them, let's say, minimum wage, you know, $12 or $14 an hour? Perhaps for the first 6 months, do it for free. Just tell them that they're going to volunteer. This is a part of their service to the church, all that stuff. But then if things grow and you're getting income, let's say you make $50,000 in your first year or maybe in your second year, then you then make a budget and you pay your students $10, $12, $14 an hour. When I was at USC, we had work study students at our church. And so I would have 8-10 students that I would pay them. I think back in those days, it was $10 or $12 an hour. And they would host the events. They would open and close the church. All of the mundane stuff that you as a pastor or the church leadership really shouldn't be doing, you want to have the young people learn responsibility, learn what it's like to be in charge of an event, make sure you pair them up with an older person, a mentor that can walk them through the basics, and then make it into a win. And this will provide a real incentive for your church to want to do this. Because remember, people are going to be hesitant at first. It's going to sound like we're selling out, like that's not what the church should do. I remember I had this, I think he was a financial planner, young man in his late 20s. And he's like, oh, this is horrible, a horrible idea. That's not what the church should do. It's not even legal in the IRS. I said to him, I've actually done all the homework with the IRS, with my attorney, with our accountant and our CPAs and all these things, the CFO, and this is all legit. He just had a moral problem with it. And so you may have some people like that. And by the way, you should do your homework. This is one of the steps here with the IRS and all that stuff. But we'll get to that. But back to utilizing young people, it'll give the church kind of a boost in morale. Like, oh man, my kids are involved and they're learning how to, you know, clean up after themselves. So that's always a good thing. Number seven is develop a new income team, a new income streams team, but make sure that those people are actually doing the work. What you don't want in this new thing is to have your regular analytical people, your kind of risk management people, and your accountants to do this. That's your backup plan. Sure, you need those systems to be in place, but the people that you want at the forefront are the entrepreneurs of your church. If you as a pastor are entrepreneurial, then great. If you're not, then you need to look for one or two people. You don't need 10 or 5 or even 3. One or two people that have a proven track record in their personal lives as business owners. And not just traditional business owners, but as entrepreneurial gifted people that know how to create something from nothing, because entrepreneurship, even though it's so popular these days, it's still a risk. There is risk involved. And this is where you do need some risk management people and accountants and all this stuff. But don't put them at the front of this, because they will throw water on all your ideas. Don't do it alone. Work with at least one, maybe two other people to develop these fresh ideas, test them out, think them through, think outside the bun, as they say, and move forward. Now, what I would recommend is to not have this take so long. Think through your ideas fairly quickly and begin to move forward, because creating income is not easy. You may be doing something online. You might be one of the things that maybe I'll let the cat out of my bag. So you may want to do this. One of the things that I'm considering doing, our entrepreneurial team, we call it our new revenue team, is actually charging people to come to church. Charging people to go to church. You're like, what? Yes, I'm thinking of moving our church towards a Netflix subscription model where people pay $9.99 a month or $14.99 a month to go to church. Now, what do they get in return? Well, I don't know yet. But it's going to involve online stuff, online programming, not just the sermon or the podcast. That may be part of it. But I'm thinking perhaps original content that would be delivered through YouTube or through Facebook Live or through, yeah, these normal platforms. But it would be content that people actually want to hear and actually want to listen to. And as I said, I'm not fully developed on this yet. I'm still working on some things. There's this one creative type who wants to actually make little short films out of my sermons and get a couple actors and kind of act out, let's say, John 3:16, you know, and the whole Nicodemus story, and to do it in a way that is creative, like a music video or that kind of thing, and then have that be a part of the subscription. So you might want to get creative, and so that's something that we're trying that is a little bit out of the box as far as this charging to go to church thing. Now, you know, if you think about it, this idea of charging for church isn't new. The Mormons do this already. I believe that they... Is it a mandate, I believe, or is it even a withdrawal from your bank account? I think the minute that you become a member, you have to give 10% to their church. It's a must. So this is not new. This is just us in the evangelical world perhaps catching up to the rest of faith groups. So develop a new income stream team made up of people who actually do the work and who are gifted in entrepreneurial ventures. Number 8 is redesign your giving report into 3 areas: tithes, rentals, and investments. So what I recommend is going back to the 40-40-20 rule is that, you know, traditionally when you give the annual report to your church at the end of the year, it normally just has big strokes, you know, like big broad strokes: outreach, evangelism, worship, right? And maybe operations, salary kind of stuff. Well, that's boring. Now you want to do it in 3 very clear areas: tithes and offerings, number 2, investments, and number 3, rentals. And you want to have those 3 reports be very clear. Same thing, you know, assets and expenses and all the usual stuff. You want to have your balance sheet out, and you want to have all of those stuff, your P&L, profit and loss. We use QuickBooks at our churches, different churches that I've been a part of. So you want to have this be well done and well documented. You can look for some maybe QuickBooks experts out there that are offered online, or you can go to a class or et cetera. But the point is you want to have your reports that go to your church, to your board, to your leadership team, be basically representative of your financial plan, so that it's not just tithes and offerings and then all the expenses, but that it's actually showing clearly how much money and percentages is coming from tithes and offerings. And you want to use a 40-40-20 rule, or maybe that can be like a goal for you. And then have your tithes and offerings be page 1, page 2 is your rentals, and then page 3 is your investments. By the way, speaking of the 40-40-20 rule, what I recommend, maybe I said this already, is that you think of those 3 areas: tithes and offerings, rentals, and investments. Now, what I mean by investments is that you may have a house that someone gives you or that donates to you. And so you may want to think about how do you then rent that house and use it as investment, an investment property. It might be that you have someone who gives you a $100,000 grant, and instead of you putting it towards ministry and that kind of stuff, maybe you go to a local bank, or you look for a CPA or for a financial planner or a wealth manager that can perhaps give you 2%, 3%, or 4% on your investments, and keep that in the bank or wherever for, let's say, 10, 20, 30 years. It's a long-term investment. So that investment piece is not the easiest thing, because it depends on how much assets you have and if you have actually something to invest. So in the 2 churches that I've been a part of, one of them had, I believe, assets, yeah, from, I think it was a sale of a building. And so we had a couple million dollars in there. And so we had invested that money. And then, of course, we have the church property itself. So you may want to even think about selling perhaps part of your building. I don't mean just renting it, but actually selling it to then have that be an asset that you hold, meaning you have that income and then you invest that income. Perhaps you want to buy a 2 or 3 homes and you rent them out to college students or to young moms, that kind of thing. And other churches that have been a part of the same thing. Normally, it's a selling of property that gives you that added bonus of that income or that investment value that you can then invest somewhere else. So think of it that way. So I think that was talking about your giving reports. Okay, number 9, choose board members who are entrepreneurs. I kind of already said that one, but this is now more your actual board or your leadership team. Make sure that you have a nice balance between managers and entrepreneurs. Managers are going to be thinking of all the negative stuff, and that's not bad. You want people to be thinking of what could go wrong, but then you also want the creatives and the entrepreneurs. I don't want to say creatives. Creatives are a different breed. You know, they might be the ones who actually paint the place or make it look beautiful or decorate. Entrepreneurs, those are different people than creatives or managers. Those are people that take risks, that are willing to work extremely hard and hustle, as they say, and to do whatever it takes to see something through. Different than a creative, different than a musician. We're talking about people who actually have skin in the game. Look for those people to be on your leadership team, on your board, on your staff, at least in your new income stream team. So that's number 9. Number 10 is you need to think through the moral and theological questions of this whole thing. Because as I mentioned earlier, people, they will come at you, and it's not a bad thing, with theological questions. Jesus never did this, Pastor. Why is our church having to rent space to non-Christians or to gay people or to non-Christians use our sanctuary to get married? What are you going to do with same-sex couples, Pastor? Isn't it unbiblical to have people not give? Won't this discourage people from giving? Shouldn't we teach our kids, Pastor, and our families to give? I mean, I've been giving for 50 years. Those are all very important questions. And what I would recommend is that you remind people that you're teaching people how to give all the time. And that you have a plan for that. Maybe if you teach once a year on giving or twice a year, a local church here, Cottonwood, I think they call it H&H. Is that what they call it? House and I forget. It's something about like outreach and worship. And so they have kind of a giving, I don't know, weekend, I think twice a year. My point is you want to have a plan that encourages your current members, your current people to give. So yes, the answer is yes. But you also want to train people and walk through these things yourself on the theological questions. You want to go through biblical examples of Abraham and how he was a wealthy man, of Jesus who healed the woman at the well who was looking for water to feed her animals so that she could do her business, you know. And that wasn't obviously the best business. She was a prostitute, but my point is Jesus was interacting with business people all the time. Of course, we know that Zacchaeus was a businessman. The young ruler was a rich businessman. Judas was a crooked businessman, but he was a money person. Matthew was a tax collector. So there are plenty of people in the Bible. I mean, Paul was a entrepreneur, you could say, and he had his own business, as you know, in leather, tent making, as well as in pastoring and church planting. So you want to walk people through the biblical and theological do's and don'ts of your financial plan so that people understand that these are different times. These are very difficult times, and that your church may not be around in 5 years or 3 years or maybe 10 if you're lucky, unless you begin to move your church towards a 40-40-20 plan. And how these are theological questions that we need to be answering now when it comes to same-sex stuff or alcohol, or, you know, why are people going to use our church if they're not believers? You want to think through that, I would say, through evangelistic kind of ways, meaning that you are being a witness. But you want to think of it more as a partnership. I wouldn't be so quick to say you're going to save every person in that AA meeting that's using your hall on Monday nights. because you probably won't. Just every room, every organization has their own rules. But instead, you want to think through, you want to think more about partnerships, about how to get along with your community, how to be a blessing to your community, how to be kingdom-minded to your community. So let's say you're renting your space to the YMCA and they want to have a mommy and me classes, or maybe there's a Zumba instructor that's in the area that needs to grow, a place to grow. You want to see it not as we're going to save them and pray for them. I think that can be a bit even misleading. It may happen, yes. But I think more than anything, you want to see it as you're a blessing to other people. You're providing a safe, godly place, friendly place, a place of prayer and a place of love and of kindness to people that need it. We have over 400 people that come to our property every Monday night, AA. And the love that they receive from us just in those few moments where we pass each other in the hallway and we have meetings about this and that, that's priceless. Because not only are they receiving, but we're also learning. I've learned so much about AA just by being around the leadership team from the AA group that we have at our church. Same goes with different partnerships that we have. And so don't just see it as I said, evangelism. See it as partnering, as kingdom blessing, as you are providing goods and services to people that need it, that otherwise may go to a secular place that maybe the night before had, I don't know, a fight or some crazy party that was happening in that same hall, and now these beautiful families are having a quinceañera or a baby shower in the same space. So think of it more about being a blessing. Matthew 5, that we are supposed to be a city set on a hill, that you're being kingdom-minded through these partnerships. So think more about those moral questions. But if it is, let's say, for example, the whole issue of alcohol has been raised in my church many times, and we have a lot of pros and cons. But I think that as we walk down that road, and we'll see what we do, it's not so much about the dangers of drinking and all that. It's more about safety, about partnership, about, comfortability. Do people in your church support that? And if they don't, then you have to move on to another way, and you have to believe that God will provide through other means. And so you have to, at the end of the day, be comfortable with your own decisions. And then when it comes to same-sex marriages, I mean, obviously most churches have a pretty black and white policy when it comes to these things. You want to look at the state laws. You want to look at the potentials of being sued and ADA issues, meaning the Disability Act and having ramps and that kind of thing. These are things, all these things I've looked at. And I've spoken to lawyers and attorneys and ADA experts, and we've paid some fees to make sure that we have all of those ducks lined up so that if these things happen, and they will happen, or if someone raises concerns from your church about these things, and they will, you are ready so that you can provide the best answer to their questions. And if you have any, of course, need, or you want to just bounce some thoughts off of me, please feel free to call me and we can talk. Number 11 is have three price levels. And this is what I mentioned earlier. This is the last step of these 11 steps on how to raise avocados and sell weed. Actually had to, develop a new financial plan for your church. But number 11 is have three price levels. This is something that I did at USC, the church there on campus. I had three membership plans, basically. I had the basic, the premium, and the gold, right? The basic plan that was free was to our members in good standing. And you as a leadership team, you need to know, do these people actually give to the church and how much? I mean, I'm all for knowing some of those things because it helps inform your decision-making process. And not everyone needs to know, but at least someone should know besides your accountant. So let's say if, I don't know, Aunt Kelly and Uncle Joe want to rent your church to have their birthday party. Well, you need to say, are you a member in good standing? Oh, yeah, back in 1955. Well, no, I mean like the last 2 years. And have you been giving faithfully? And if they say no, then you say, okay, we have another level for you. But for those who are giving and are members in good standing, I would do free for them. The second level would be the partners, those people that are the cousins, the aunts. Maybe they are that counselor that rents your office, or those food trucks that use your space, or that kingdom group that meets at your church, or AA or CR, you know, Celebrate Recovery. You want to give them a break. It could be 25% off. I've done as high as 50% off. Don't feel like you have to give them anything for free. These are partners. These are people that are costing you some money, especially if they're not renting your space, if you're giving stuff away for free. Now, speaking of that, what do you do with partners that are currently on your campus for free? Well, I would go back to them and say, here's our financial plan. And now this office space that you've been receiving for free, here's how much the AC costs, here's how much water and utilities and all this stuff costs. Can we work out a deal where we're going to charge $1,000 a month plus 80% utilities? Or maybe it's only $500 a month plus 100% utilities. You want to come up with a plan for everyone, especially if there are partners. And if you want to grandfather someone in, then that's fine, but think it through. Think it through. And it's better that you think that through ahead of time than having to have those really awkward conversations later in life, and then you have to have people leave and get upset and that kind of stuff, which is inevitable at times. But have three price levels: members for free, partners maybe let's say 50% off, and then to the community you charge full price. And I would charge a competitive price. So for example, for our hall, right now we charge $2,000 if you want to have 100 or more people in our hall for a quinceañera or for a party or a conference. If you are a partner, we charge you 50% off. And if you are a member in good standing that gives faithfully to the church, and that we know this for sure, it's documented, then it's free. So those are the three levels that we have. And then the bonus step that I wanted to give you, the 12th one, it is about the IRS and the legal aspects of business in the church. That's just way too long of a, I guess, of a topic to go over now. But it is possible. I think the quick answer that I have discovered is that it is doable, as long as I think the language is, as long as whatever you're doing as far as business fits with your mission, stated mission, vision of your church. So for example, the way we do this is we do Zumba because it fits our mission to provide health and emotional support to women in the community or men. Parties, the same thing. They provide a service of love and safety to kids and families in our community. So you have to have something written in your board minutes so that if the IRS comes saying, hey, why are you renting your space to a business? Why are you making money? That all of this is covered, that you talk to your CPA, to your lawyers, attorneys, so that no one is going to sue you, or even church members may not badmouth you and call you a liar or a heretic or that kind of thing, or worse yet, that you're breaking the law. Make sure that you do your homework when it comes to all that stuff. ADA, I've spent I don't know how many hours doing this. It's all doable. There are all kinds of programs out there that you can sign up for that will do a survey of your church when it comes to ADA and give you a letter, so that if someone does sue you, you can show this letter to them. And anyway, this is too long of an answer, but let me just say that I'm available if you would like to talk further about IRS. I'm not an IRS expert, but I do know enough to be dangerous in these topics. So with that said, I hope that at least this gives you a... It sounds overwhelming, huh? It is overwhelming, but I've been doing this now for almost 10 years, since 2008. And I can tell you it's doable, it's legal, and it is a way forward for most urban churches in America, especially here in California. It's not an option. It's not you not being spiritual. It's not you being a business, not a church. This is the way forward. And whether it's going to a Netflix type of thing, or whether it's just renting your church to do weddings to the community, these are the things that you have to consider if you're going to be relevant, effective, and really, if I was to really say, why am I doing this? This is to bless my community. I truly believe that not only is the income important, but you're actually blessing hundreds and maybe thousands of people through you using your space for the benefit of the city, for the good of the city, but through business partnerships. I hope that these things can help you. By the way, there is a book by a gentleman that I don't know him personally, but I know my friend Josh does, Mark DeMoss. And you can look him up. I think it's DeYMAS. I could be wrong. And I think it's his book is coming out this month. And I think it deals with money and the church and exactly these things that I'm talking about. I haven't read it. I don't even know if it's out. But read it. I can't wait to read it. I wish I was actually in the book. I wish I had written a book, to be honest. And maybe I will on this very topic because I've done it successfully for 10 years, since 2008. And I really love it. And I have been, let's see, just to maybe tell you a little bit, I would say it was maybe over $300,000 at the church at USC in 3 years. And then at the current place, I think where this is only the first year, we are in route to raise almost $100,000 in the first 12 months at the current church where I'm at, all in new revenue. And there's more to come. So we're excited. I love this. It's something that I feel I am really naturally good at. And I'd like to do it. I really would. I think if I had a side business, it would be this. It would be to help churches come up with new income streams and to walk them through the process. But anyway, all that to say, I'm available. I'd love to help. I'm not a tax expert. I'm not a IRS guy. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a CPA. But I do know from experience and from doing this for almost, actually more than 10 years, 10, 11 years, how to do this. And these books and these, I'm sure, conferences that are coming up are going to be very beneficial. So I would encourage you to sign up for those things. I hope I can be a part of that. Maybe I should do a training on this at some point, and you guys can all come to my training at my house or online or whatever. But I think this is something that has to happen, especially as we hear these rumors of another economic downturn in 2020 or 2021. And what happens if Trump is elected again, or if, I don't know, Elizabeth Warren or Joe Biden wins? What's going to happen to our churches? Let me wrap up with one story. I have a 32-year-old cousin of mine who was here earlier today. We're playing some music and we're talking about church. And he's like, Trigg, I don't think people my age are ever going to go back to church, ever. You know what? I believe him 100%. 100%. And I thought, he loves music. I love music. I wonder if our church can make rehearsal rooms and rent them to him and his friends. No weed, no booze, you know, no cussing. You have to have your rules, right? But what if the way forward isn't to have them go to church, as in sit in a pew and listen to a sermon, but rent church space to do his music in an environment where there is love, grace, acceptance, where you as the church staff or as a volunteer can just get to know my cousin and say, hey, hi, are you David's cousin? Like, yeah, I'm playing bass tonight. Oh, okay. I'll come later tonight to close up. Hope you're good. There's some water next door and whatever. What if that's the way forward for the gospel? What if that's the evangelism to come? That's what I'm excited about. Yes, I'm excited about making money. I'm not going to lie, because our church is needed and it funds ministry and it helps single moms and seniors and orphans. But I'm maybe even more excited about the potential for relationship through new income streams that benefit everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like, subscribe, comment, go to iTunes, leave me a 5-star review on this podcast. Thank you again, and I will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The David Trigg Show. Find the complete archive at davidtrigg.com or subscribe for free through the podcast app on iTunes or Stitcher on Android.
Each week, we bring you a message of joy, success, and personal power in spite of fear, anxiety, and depression. Because as we like to say, though there's pain in the night, gozo comes in the morning.